This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report with Rolene Marks.
All right, and Rolene Marks is standing in for Anthony Reich. Rolene Marks, a very good morning. Thanks for doing so. How are you?
Always a pleasure. Vibing here in the on a Wednesday morning. Has it been quickly what day it was?
Absolutely, does have that weekend vibe about it. But lots to talk about. This the flag march. It's Yom Yerushalayim. Can you just give us, before we talk about the specifics of where people go, what the problem is, why is this flag march happening? What is the historical context of this day?
Ooh, juicy questions this early on a Wednesday morning. So the flag march takes place every Yom Yerushalayim, that is Jerusalem Day. That is the day that we celebrate the reunification of Jerusalem. If you remember, before the 1967 war, the city of Jerusalem was divided. And we can't forget those iconic words during the Six-Day War, HaKotel Beyadeinu, the Kotel is in our hands, and Jerusalem was reunited under Israeli rule. So Jerusalem Day celebrates us, and in celebration of Jerusalem Day, thousands of marches, and yesterday we had a very, very special event involving marches from other countries, but thousands of marches with Israeli flags will march through the old city. Now, it is sometimes contentious because of the route that the march takes. It goes through the Muslim quarter. If you are familiar with the old city of Jerusalem, you will know that it's divided into four quarters, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, and Armenian. So they will walk through and end their march at the Kotel, and it's a very, very peaceful march. However, as we know, our detractors, the anti-Israel element, will look for any excuse to find or to take umbrage with it. Yesterday we have heard from Hamas saying that no harm should come to Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is the rhetoric that they employ quite readily for any occasion, and that they are ready to fire rockets should the flag march go ahead. The United States has urged calm and restraint. I mean, I always love it, Howard, when they choose Israel to urge calm and restraint, but seem to forget that in other parts of the world. I mean, imagine you and I had to say we urge the United States to show calm and restraint on school shootings. I mean, just a wild thought. Maybe I'm just very cheeky this morning.
A little bit cynical this morning. But let me just try and understand this. So before 1967, Israel becomes a state recognized by the United Nations in 1948. At that stage, it is not so-called occupying the West Bank. It doesn't have half of Jerusalem, including the holiest Jewish site on earth. So I'm imagining between 1948 and 1967 a world of peace in the Middle East, because there should be really no reason, or there can't be any allegations against Israel during that time. What happens during that? In 1967, did Israel then just decide that all this peace was too much for it? Was there peace?
Well, as you know that when you do fight a war and you make territorial gains, bearing in mind that we didn't have a Palestinian state. We didn't have a Palestinian state as we understand Palestinians today. We also didn't have Palestinians as we know them in the media today. That terminology only came about in 1964. So yes, so what, you know, during those years, there was relative peace.
Was there?
Obviously.
Well, I mean, in 1948.
sporadic issues
yes.
In between, but there wasn't the issues that we see today. 1967, as in all wars, Israel makes territorial gains, including reuniting the city of Jerusalem, half of which was under Jordanian rule. And, you know, this is what happens in war, Israel, of course, has a completely different standard than it is judged by.
So let's look at that, though, Rolene. Let's look at why that 1967 war took place in the first place, because ahead of this war, there was a very, very real fear that Israel was going to be completely annihilated. There wasn't an acceptance that Israel had a right to exist at all.
Exactly, and we had the combined armies of several Arab states launch an attack. Okay, Israel did preemptively attack the Egyptian Air Force, but we had the combined armies of several countries launch attacks on Israel. And, you know, every other war where there is wartime territorial gains, you know, it seems to be accepted for the most part, albeit begrudgingly. But of course, as we know, Israel is judged to a different standard. And one could ask, you know, the very contentious areas of Gaza and the West Bank, if it's such an issue, why doesn't Egypt retake Gaza? And why doesn't Jordan take the West Bank? Because the West Bank, as we understand it, was mostly under Jordanian control as well. So, you know, we have so many arguments around it, but I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's this lack of wanting, although we have seen the landscape changing slightly now, of wanting Israel to actually exist.
Mm-hmm. So what happens now? So now we have Yom Yerushalayim, which is the reunification of Jerusalem. Is there a greater concern this year, given the different elements and more right-wing elements in the Israeli coalition government?
Well, I think that's a very fair question, because we have heard from Ben Gavir. He is going to be participating in the Flag Day event. Now, we know that he is a very, very polarizing populist type figure. We know that just 2 years ago we had a 10-day conflagration because of rockets fired towards Jerusalem on Flag Day. Our police, Israel's police, they have prepared for every eventuality, every possibility, including potential terror attacks, violent attacks, maybe even rocket attacks. The government has threatened, or our defense ministry has threatened Hamas, don't you dare raise your heads on Jerusalem Day, because we will give you a fat smack back. Not quite in those words, but basically that sentiment. So we are preparing that today, tomorrow could be quite a tense day in Jerusalem. A lot of roads will be closed, access roads will be closed to ensure that the police can properly maintain security around the route of the marches.
All right, and we'll certainly keep an eye on that story. Here's a very, very weird one. Israel has accused Elon Musk of stoking anti-Semitism on Twitter after anti-Soros remarks. I saw the Jews was trending on Twitter yesterday, and I didn't really understand why. I'm assuming this is the reason.
It's always worrying when the Jews are trending, but kol hakavod to whoever's intention it was to take that trend and turn it into reasons to be proud you are Jewish. But yeah, Elon Musk tweeted out a tweet about George Soros. I know there's all kinds of conspiracy theories around George Soros. I myself don't particularly follow what he says, so I stay out of that fray. But Elon Musk put out a tweet saying, Soros reminds me of Magneto, which I think is an X-Men character. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't do comic books either. Okay, I do Yellowstone, people. All right. But apparently Magneto is a villain from the X-Men, who's also a Holocaust survivor. Soros is a Holocaust survivor. And Musk went on to say Soros wants to erode the very fabric of civilization. Soros hates humanity. Very, very dangerous words, because what are we always blamed for, Howard, amongst every other thing in the world?
Yeah, it's so interesting. So does that mean we're not allowed to criticize somebody who's Jewish, even if we don't make reference to their Jewishness? Like, I find this weird. I mean, I know that Soros is always put forward as this Jewish figure, and he's become almost a symbol. But does it mean that we can never criticize him? I mean, I get it, but I'm finding it difficult to see why criticizing somebody who clearly Musk doesn't like and doesn't agree with, why would that be considered anti-Semitic?
Well, that's a very, very fair question. And I think where the issue came in was his comparison to Magneto. Wow. Because there you are making very specific Holocaust references. And you are using the type of rhetoric that led to the Holocaust. And of course, every anti-Semite jumped up and thought, this is absolutely prime opportunity for us to go out and talk about what bad things in the world the Jews are responsible for. And our foreign
ministry... So it's almost what it led to. So in of itself, it might not have been a problematic tweet, but what followed it became the problem.
Well, this is it, and this is what the foreign ministry actually said. You know, they said that Elon Musk's tweet smelled of anti-Semitism. Well, I don't know how well you can smell the tweet, but, mm-hmm. you know, I can understand. And immediately brought a flood of anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. So I think that's where the issue is. The issue is not that he's criticizing George Soros as a man. I think it's the fact that he used a very specific analogy to Magneto. They have something very, very specific in common, Holocaust survivors, and using the kind of language, you know, wanting to destroy humanity, it takes us to a very, very ugly place where we have been before.
Yeah, very, very interesting indeed. The one thing I wanted to ask you, what was your thoughts on South Africa getting involved in the conflict resolution between Russia and Ukraine? I think they've just been pushed into it, and I think it's the only way they can save face and try and show neutrality is by offering this. That's my conspiracy theory on it. But it is interesting to note, and that's why I'm asking you the question, the difference in approach that South Africa seems to have with this conflict in terms of Israel and the Middle East.
Well, allow me to hop upon my soapbox, but I find it absolutely astounding. You know, South Africa very much borrowing from our role in the past of conflict resolution, wanting for whatever reason to be seen, and it's not just South Africa alone, it's other countries like Senegal, Zambia, Uganda, Egypt, Congo, various others, in playing a role in possibly brokering some kind of peace between Zelensky and Putin or Russia and Ukraine. They're going to be holding a peace summit in Kyiv and in Moscow. But South Africa, why don't you take this conciliatory approach to Israel and the Palestinian conflict? This is a conflict where if you didn't take such a blatantly biased and partisan approach, you really could play a vital and important role in helping to at least bring about rapprochement and negotiation. I find it staggeringly hypocritical of South Africa.
Indeed. I'd love your thoughts. 34519 or 0618951019. And it is 8 o'clock. That was Rolene Marks with the Israel Report.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.